You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of March 4th, 2020, and we're here to announce our new game, Watch Us Sleep, on Twitch.
Back to the Experience Points podcast. I'm George Albor.
My name is Scott Juster.
We're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a serious but not humorous conversation about video games. There's some games coming out.
Eventually.
One of these days. Yeah, what are we still waiting on? Animal Crossing? Jesus.
The thing is, March and April is going to hit us like a punch in the face. I mean, I'm just kind of twiddling my thumbs, so to speak, here, and hell is going to open up, and Cloud is going to step out of that hell rift.
Yeah, Cloud is going to step out of it. I'm going to take out a second mortgage on my Animal Crossing home. Also, I didn't realize that I need to be planning about what I'm going to name my island. No one told me I was going to have to name my island.
Well, I mean, there's still time to start a change.org petition or whatever.
I got to think of a doozy. If anyone listening has a really great... I'm all about the puns, you know? Uh-huh. So I really need a good, solid Animal Crossing Island pun name. Okay. Hit me up.
That's everyone's assignment.
We're still waiting on those ones. We're playing some other games, but in the meantime, we're talking about some news stories. The one that is high on my list to talk about, because I'm a big League of Legends player, and in fact, I've been sick over the past week. It's not coronavirus, everybody, before you ask.
I mean, have you been diagnosed, though, George?
That's true. Well, I'm staying in place, which is the important thing, to not spread disease.
Yeah, the scientifically responsible thing to do.
Dude, I played, no joke, like 12 games of League of Legends today and lost maybe like 10 of them. It was a rough going. Here's my theory. Total tangent, by the way. We'll get to the podcast eventually anyway. My theory is that the type of people who play during a workday are, they're jobless. They got nothing to lose. They're wild cards. Mm-hmm. They're sick. And so they're not all there like me, right? Or they're just straight trolling. Like they're 8-year-olds who have like the day off or whatever, you know? Like I am convinced the teams that I played with today, far more toxic than a weekend or, you know, evening cadre of players.
When there's upstanding citizens playing League of Legends.
Yes, exactly right. I feel like the queue was just full of people who should have been in their day job, is what I'm trying to say.
Or people that are just hopped up on Benadryl like yourself.
Exactly right, exactly right. All right, so we're talking a little bit about, first up is Valorant.
Yes.
Valorant is Riot Games, putting the S in Riot Games, their latest that I believe is coming out later this year. I think the rumor that I heard from a League of Legends podcast was September. Mm. And this is their version of a tactical first-person shooter a la CSGO.
Okay. I have so many questions about this because I'm not generally in the Riot-verse.
Yes.
I guess, okay. Well, one, we talked a little bit about this, but CSGO is a very strangely influential game, but I feel like it's obviously a big game. There are a lot of streamers.
It's very well known. Yep.
Yeah, but I feel like compared to even something, I don't know, I feel like it's more influential than it is famous, you know?
Right, compared to something like Fortnite.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, it's weird because the game has been around for so long that I think there's a stable of viewers. Like, look, every now and then I'll tune into a CSGO competitive match because it's inherently interesting.
Yeah.
You know? There's a high level of skill that you can see on display. Yeah. I have not played CSGO in like a decade. Any CS, I guess, at this point, right?
Yeah.
Which is wild to me. And also, I don't think there's really all that many games that are competing in that space. Like, off the top of your head, how many like truly tactical competitive shooters are there out there that people still talk about? Like, we have Rainbow Six Siege, which is
Siege is the closest, but I feel like Siege is actually going in the opposite direction, more towards the
class-based
sci-fi, you know? Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, because there's so much like environmental destruction and class-based stuff around Siege. But it is technically tactical, right? Like, there is strategy involved. There's like a lot of, you know, where you're going to be breaching from. There's a lot of strategy that is interesting to watch from that perspective.
But it's definitely about the it's about the abilities in a way that it feels like CSGO is not as much about the abilities, you know?
And then you have things like PUBG, which are tactical in the sense that it's a bit more realistic, but you're still playing like over a large, very large map. It's a totally different game because it's Battle Royale.
You and also you like, parachute into it, you know? I mean, it's there's a certain like cartoonish nature to it, even from the get-go.
There's like Escape from Tarkov, which I'm not super familiar with, but I know is extremely realistic. Like, you know, if you reload, you lose your bullets, that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Very, very realistic in terms of a tactical shooter. And then I imagine there's a bunch of other like indie games that have been inspired by CSGO, but it feels like from the first-person shooter side of things, we have the insane run and gun mad dash side where you have your Battlefields and your Call of Duties, and then you have your wackier class or bizarre games like Fortnite, all the battle royales, and I would even lump Overwatch in there, which is very much class based and it's competitive shooter ish but there's also all of these powers. It's interesting to see a game like Valorant try to enter the space on much, much, much closer to the CSGO side, where it actually does feel like there's a gap. Like, why has a game like this not existed already, where it's trying to marry some of the abilities that we see from class-based or, I don't know what you would call them, like, weirder shooters with the more just raw tactical gameplay like CSGO?
Yeah. I guess, well, I mean, there's two things. Like, one, it feels like, I mean, this is just like armchair strategy or whatever, but it feels like Fortnite took the air out of the more wackier shooters like Overwatch because it kind of went full wacky in a weird way.
Yeah.
And so Overwatch was left in this weird spot where it was not as tactical as CSGO, but it wasn't as bonkers as Fortnite, and so where does that leave it? And without a hook, without like a siege like hook where the environments are super destructible, or we have much more structured seasons where we're always getting new heroes, you know, where does that leave your kind of more cartoony type shooters? And it feels like maybe it's a smart thing to actually go in the opposite direction of the more tactical shooter, because that's the stuff that's actually been left alone for a while.
Yeah. My other thought is just Riot is uniquely poised to come out of the gates with a esport, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like that's what everyone is thinking about when they're thinking of Valorant, because CSGO draws in huge numbers. It's it's very skill based and there's not a whole lot of luck or variance involved in the same way that Rainbow Six Siege makes sense as a competitive esport. And Overwatch can strain credulity a little bit from an esports perspective, considering how many wacky things are going on at any given time. I mean, no hate on Overwatch, competitive Overwatch. I think they've done an admirable job of making that a far more viewable experience over the years that they've been working on and perfecting that. But I think there's something much more easily understandable about something like CSGO that Valorant will sort of slot in really nicely, I think, from a competitive side. Like, I already out of the gates, I can tell you right now, I am fascinated to watch high-level, and honestly, it's probably CSGO players who'll be doing this, high-level shooter players coming into this space and sort of figuring out what that meta is, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I wasn't quite clear on, I mean, I guess there are certain like tactical powers in this game where I'm seeing, here's like a special grenade, or this person has some sort of, you know, wall that paints people so that you can more easily shoot at them or whatever. But is this kind of where, I haven't paid too much attention to the more tactical shooters, but like, is this closer to what CSGO is like today? Like, do you have a sense of that, or is this trying to like branch off a little bit from that?
I mean, it's interesting to see how they're trying to move a little bit closer to the Overwatch side of things without going too far, right?
Yeah.
The biggest thing is that every individual character is unique and has their own signature ability. That's just not the case in CSGO, right? Like, everyone is the same tactical person, and it's what weapons you buy in that loadout that will result in how you're approaching combat.
Yeah.
This is interesting though, because every character also has two other abilities that they can also buy. So the thing that took me the longest to grasp was the gun economy in something like CSGO, right? You would watch matches where the announcers would call it, like, this is the pistol round, right? Where everybody would have pistols. And the whole reason is because they're just banking their cash so that the person who's very good with a sniper can buy that sniper rifle, which costs more money, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if that sniper person dies, he loses their sniper rifle. Whereas if the game is lost, that person can hide with their sniper rifle and carry that over into the next round. So that's the exact same way that Valorant will be working with, but beyond just the weapons and the grenades that you associate in CSGO, they're now these special abilities. So that whole economy system still totally playing in. Now, the one thing though is CSGO, I think you can trade and like swap guns and pick up somebody else's weapon. So I don't know. I don't think that will be possible here, but it seems very much on the CSGO side, just with those few tweaks of what those abilities are. And some of them do look pretty wacky, right? You mentioned building the wall. I saw weird poison clouds, like, I don't know. There's all kinds of weird shit. So,
another stupid question. What is the economy? Like, do you get it for kills? Do you get it for? I don't know what the modern economy is for these shooters.
So basically, winning rounds nets you a certain amount of money. Getting kills nets you a certain amount of money, and then you'll just earn money through, like, even losing. Like, if you lose multiple rounds, I don't know what it is in CS:GO exactly, but I know in other games there are like catch up mechanics where if you lose like three rounds in a row, you might get like a slight cash bump.
Yeah.
So there is opportunity there, and then if you say, I'm pretty sure that you can like toss your weapon to someone else. So if you had a sniper rifle, you could buy a sniper rifle and then toss it to somebody else. So in the case of Valorant, it's a sort of, I mean, it's kind of a snowbally thing, or it's something where you say, I really need this person to get the most kills so that they can unlock this ability, which will be really clutch in the next map or whatever.
Right. It's such a strange combo of things where even in the gameplay trailer that they put out, you know, there are people with those like weird powers and stuff, but when they start the round, people are just kind of bunny hopping around. I mean, it feels like games are so specialized in terms of, okay, that we're going to have a slice of this and a slice of this and a slice of this, and we're going to like test the hell out of it. So it has something for this feels like a game design as designed by a sniper. You know, it's like we have a very specific slice of people we're looking at, and we are targeting them specifically, you know?
I think that's 100% accurate. Because, here's the thing. Do you have any interest in playing this? Because I can tell you right now, I love League of Legends. I'm fascinated to watch this game.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated to see how it plays out, especially from the perspective of a studio who's releasing like three or four new games in a year.
Yeah.
From a place of only having one for the past decade. But I can tell you right now, I'm never going to be playing this game. I know I'm not good enough to really compete at that high level play. And knowing that means I'll probably never even try.
I feel similarly, where even watching this in my head, I'm like, well, if I'm going to do this, I should probably just play Overwatch because I might actually be able to win.
Yeah, because I can play Winston and just hold down the left button and I don't have to aim at all. It's great.
And then every once in a while I'll get a kill, you know? I mean, whereas this, it feels like it is much more precision-based. I mean, even the way that they're marketing this, they have, you know, their kind of cheeky website where they specifically talk about latency and the frame rate and all that stuff. So they're targeting a very specific type of person that cares about that stuff, not just from a gameplay perspective, but just an overall technical perspective.
Yep.
And I just don't know. It's almost like, would I be wasting other people's time playing this? You know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I can tell you from today, plenty of people will waste other people's time. So
from League.
From League, get used to it.
But I feel like what is the state of the lore with League of Legends? Because I feel like that is such a popular aspect of this game, of that game. And I don't know if Valorant needs something like that to survive.
So my understanding is Valorant has absolutely nothing to do with League of Legends, other than their name sounds similar to Valorant, a place in League of Legends. But to me, that seems like a missed opportunity. We have gun wielders. There's characters like Lucian or Senna and Jin, that like, well, maybe that would have been cool and have some of their abilities be similar to the abilities that they have in League.
And there's that magic people too. There's clearly people that have like magical knives and stuff in this game. You
right,
know?
But the thing is, League of Legends doesn't have like a fucking AK-47 and like ACOG sights, you know? Like there's no one like that degree of realism. So I guess they really needed to venture out. But yeah, my understanding is there's no connection whatsoever. Now, that doesn't mean there won't be. I think it would be interesting if, you know, maybe in the world of Valorant, League of Legends was like, I don't know, it's an entertainment property or something, you know? Like, maybe there's guest star musicians in the form of True Damage, Akali, and stuff, like the K-pop band or something. But I don't think it has anything to do with it, yeah.
Do you think it needs a story to be successful?
I mean, what is CSGO's story?
I mean, I think CSGO's story is that there was a bunch of nerds from the 90s that, you know, this is the game that they can still play, you know, whereas something like Overwatch, I feel like people care very much about the story.
What I will say is that in a world where profit is driven largely by monetization, in-game monetization items, and League of Legends has experience designing those items and selling them and promoting them using this meta world fiction that they've developed around League of Legends, I fully expect for them to give Valorant the same treatment. And I do think you need it. Like, in this day and age, you need something that will separate it out. And like, there's only so much of reskinning your gun into various colored leopard prints that will continue to be entertaining. You know, it's much more enticing to say you're going to skin your character to look like a K-pop band, and here's this animated music video that we created last week, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It just feels like the game needs something to make it stand out, or unless what is truly going to make it stand out is the technical precision. And I mean, if someone's going to do it, you know, Riot is the one with the infrastructure and the experience with online gaming. And if someone's going to do it, it's probably going to be them. But I feel like there is still some sort of hook that gets people in there. I mean, will people be cosplaying as these characters in the same way that you would see with, like, you know, any other, you know, Mortal Kombat or Overwatch or World of Warcraft or whatever?
I mean, there are people that do that for Rainbow Six Siege, you know?
Yeah, I guess that's true.
And the interesting thing to me is League of Legends has so many fans that are now just sort of like fans of Riot that my guess is people will cosplay day one without ever having played the game. And there are people that cosplay characters without ever having played those individual games either, you know?
Right.
I mean, my big question also is, at what point do you literally try to scalp the competitive players from other scenes, right? Mm-hmm. Like, some of the people that are very high-skill Rainbow Six players or people who play Fortnite at a high competitive level are former CSGO pros, you know? So, like, I would be curious to know, what is Valorant's, you know, influencer strategy? Maybe that's, like, a nerdy thing to think about, but I would be curious to know if they're going to come out of the gate with, hey, the game is playable in September. Also, our competitive season starts in January. Here's the six North American teams that you can root for, and here are their squads of five that they're each fielding, and here's the prize money, you know? There's no reason Riot couldn't come out the gates with a really strong and compelling competitive scene, and I would be shocked if they weren't already discussing this and workshopping even their rev share programs with competitive teams or competitive orgs.
Right. I mean, maybe that's a good segue into the other kind of funny story that we saw around some of the top watched videos or clips rather on Twitch.
Yes.
Have to, I mean, that has to be a part of their strategy day one of how are we going to make this streamable, and how are we going to put a cult of personality around this for streamers?
Yes. I love this random article about the Twitch streams, because Twitch is so ingrained with gaming now.
Yeah.
But the idea that so many of these have nothing to do with games is just a testament to the way that Twitch is actually consumed, you know? Yep. Like, it really isn't a thing where people just watch Twitch to see high-level play or do, like, a Let's Play. Mm-hmm. It's overwhelmingly a second-screen experience where you're watching random people do random shit, you know? And the video of this guy waking up is the most viewed video on Twitch. It's just a dude sleeping. And then he wakes up. Hilarious. I love it.
I mean, I think there's also just what... there are memes that are endemic to, or that were birthed on that platform, and then yep. people have then. We are in a place where now, when new memes are born, you can get much better metrics around them. Whereas ooh, you know, point. Who's you're the man now, dog? It's like, how many people saw that E-Bombs World site? I don't know, like how. It's impossible to measure that, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas man, now you know exactly like what is the genesis of these memes.
Yeah. Yeah. What I was telling, we were talking before we were editing, but one of the weird things to me though is like, if you are not familiar with these video game memes, how fucking weird is all of this stuff? You know, like if you're just getting into video games and you're going to Twitch and you're looking at like, oh, I'm curious, what are some of the top videos that people... Oh, here's a guy like almost shitting himself when his daughter walks in the room. Where here's Keanu Reeves at E3 is yeah. like hugely popular. Such a bizarre experience.
I mean, part of it too is it's going back to your point about how do you describe this when people talk about... I mean, I have mixed feelings on this because this is... When people talk about... gaming culture, I mean, this is what they're talking about, right? Like weird inside jokes on a platform that generally caters to people that already have a niche interest.
Yep, exactly. It's like, right.
How do you, assuming you even want to, how do you even catch yourself up on what all of this is and why it's important / funny?
It's also a weird thing where Twitch isn't really consumed in... like after the fact, like not a whole lot of people watch clips. Like what is the browsing experience on Twitch of finding this content? Right. Really, these are just popular clips captured and then shared on Reddit. Right? Right.
Yes.
Which is really what you're viewing, which also means a lot of people watching this stuff, like the one where a girl is live streaming and a like some old dude in like a Hawaiian shirt tells her she's not that interesting, which is hilarious, by the way. I saw that on Reddit ages ago, and I'm sure the vast majority of people who watch that are not gamers, you know? Like
I had forgotten that I had seen that thing until I rewatched it.
But now we have a thing called e-girls, you know? Well, I mean, I guess we've had e-girls for a while, to be fair, but like the Twitch memes around that now have just sort of built up into a life of their own, you know? Like gaming memes are now just memes. They're just generic memes.
Yes, and I suppose there's a fair amount of crossover between like general meme generation and people interested in video games on the internet.
Yeah.
Is Twitch continuing to run away with this? I mean, you know, there's Microsoft's thing.
Mixer.
Mixer. There's YouTube Gaming. There's what was the other one? There's a fighting game specific one that I forgot what it was called. I mean, with the prospect of new consoles on the horizon, is Twitch still the one to beat here?
Yeah, I mean, my understanding of what the in terms of actual numbers are, the folks that have left Twitch to stream exclusively on Mixer have plummeted in terms of their average views. Mm-hmm. But it's this bizarre thing, right, where they're brought in over to be sort of paid sponsors of entertainment on that platform, right? Much in the same way that I don't know, Netflix or ABC will like bid for a TV show, right?
Yeah.
Whereas on Twitch, so much of the revenue is bits and donations that there's this constant hustle. And you heard from some of the people that left, like Ninja and Shroud, that hustle was getting to them and they could lose, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars if they needed to take a sick day or something.
Right.
Yeah. So like, I don't know. I'd be curious to see how, at the end of the day, they round out in terms of behavior. Like, if it continued to be a thing where the revenue models were slightly different, it'd be interesting to see if Twitch is a space where sort of people get their start. Like, what if Twitch became the open mic night of streaming and Mixer became the scheduled, you know, viewing experience? And you go to Twitch to see... You see guys like you'd be the hot young upstarts, but then when they reach a certain capacity, they just go to YouTube or go to Twitch so that they can have more secure funds.
There is a certain, and it's ironic because Twitch is backed by the biggest company in the world, but there is a certain public access television type vibe that has grown up around this for better and worse. I mean, some of it is charming in that these are people that are clearly amateurs but making a go at it, and that sort of thing is interesting for a certain subgroup of people. But it's what started off as a game has just become kind of a weird, it truly has become a channel for some of these people.
Yep.
Whereas, to your point, if you are just super good at CS or Fortnite or whatever, maybe you will get poached to be a, you know, a more single threaded streaming professional.
Yeah. I mean, right now, browsing Twitch, the, you know, all of the games have sort of viewership rankings. The number one category right now is just chatting, which is people not playing anything, just random people.
Yeah. I noticed that the other day. I had logged into Twitch for the first time in some time, and just to click around those categories, and the just chatting thing really struck me, because that's where I started thinking about the cable access, you know, the local public access television thing, where it's like, oh, this is the realization of that. Like, you don't even need a studio anymore. You just need your computer, and you can start creating your own like funky little TV show for your friends or whatever. And yeah. it's gotten even past the gaming side.
Dude, now I feel really fucking old. I'm watching a live stream of a Korean girl eat soup out of a plastic tub. 1,000 people are watching this. What is going on here, folks? Oh, look, and there's a pro player who's playing Valorant. So there you go.
There you go. They're already starting.
Or maybe he's just chatting about it.
Just chatting. continuing the theme of pros. This time it's Pokemon professionals.
Yes, I'm glad we got to end on a feel good story. This comes from what, like just about a week ago or so.
Yeah.
A 7-year-old by the name of Simone Lim won a major Pokemon Junior Championship tournament, beating someone twice her age at Pokemon.
Okay, a few things. One, how bad does that 14-year-old feel right now?
Oh, real bad. How, you know, the video of it, by the way, if anyone listening has not seen this, go look at the video, because this girl is so fucking adorable. Like, if she were my daughter, I would be so proud right now. But at the same time, I really wish she'd just been like, fucking get dunked, you know?
And get
just
wrecked.
Really, just like, she has like a pet Eevee, like just rubbed it in his face, you know? Like, because she, I mean, it looked like a close match. She basically reads him, and she's like, you know, oh, I fucking played you like a fiddle, you know?
I think this also, I've watched a little bit of, you know, versus Pokemon or whatever they call it. I guess now it is professional pro Pokemon tournaments.
I mean, she gets interviewed afterwards. She's 7 years old.
Yeah, it's like, well, I'm really just stressing out about, you know, learning cursive or whatever you know? I mean, I just don't know what. The thing that strikes me so much, well, competitive Pokemon is exceedingly strange to me. It's almost like it's like watching fencing or something, where it's really one hit and you're out. There's not these protracted battles back and forth, because at most it's 2v2, completely turn-based. So you're basically, I mean, it is a slightly more strategic game of rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah. I mean, but Pokemon is wild, though, because I've seen the quote-unquote lineup that people are bringing into battles, and they have the type, the, what is it called, like, if they're, like, hostile, or, like, the feelings that they have or whatever. Yeah. You know, like their shininess or whatever, the items that they're carrying into battle. It feels like, yes, it's rock, paper, scissors, but it's almost more like, did I bring the correct toolbox of answers? And am I accessing those answers according to what I think your moves are going to be, you know?
It's it reminds me of how people have described submarine warfare or what actual deep space warfare would look like, which is, it's kind of over by the time you fire the missile, because things have to be pre-programmed so far in advance. Things don't actually move very fast, and it's really more of a game of chess. Like, this is what it looks like, where the minute that she makes that correct choice against her opponent, everything just starts crumbling for her opponent, and there's no way to actually get out of it. You've done all of this calculation up front, and then you're watching the outcome of all of these calculations.
And this is why, to this day, I have not finished a Pokemon game since Yellow.
I mean, it's just striking to see that. I mean, part of it, you know, part of it is knowing it's the ultimate meta game, you know, understanding what to bring in, what the other person's bringing in, what you have to carry with you. There's so many, there's at least three or four layers outside of the game before you even press one button in the game, which is a strange thing. And then once you're in there, it's a psychology game of trying to guess what the person is going to do. It kind of like very similar to a chess gambit where, okay, they're going to run this move. Can I counter it? And if I can't, I've already lost after one move, you know, that's it. Yeah. It's just such a strange thing, but also that you can be so young and be good at it.
Yeah. I mean, it fills me with great hope. Going back to Valorant for a second, you know, maybe not everybody has to be top tier to enjoy like a high level play, you know?
Yeah.
If I could just somehow slot into the 7-year-old junior category, you know, like how do I get in on that league?
I mean, that would be interesting if they do true skill-based matchmaking. You know, maybe we would slot ourselves in there.
I guess. And then just then I'll get actually trolled by a 7-year-old. Yeah. I mean, I love the fact that we see this person win because it's kind of like whenever you're watching, it's like when you're watching any sort of competitive event where there's like children involved, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like they're doing their best, they're trying really hard, they're actually putting in a lot of thought. You're like, man, maybe there really is hope for the next generation, you know?
And they seem to be pretty good sports about it at the end.
Yeah.
They're not trying to, you know, they're not purposefully trying to troll the entire community or, you know, they don't have weird entrance music or whatever.
Well, and also, like, not to set myself up for a total failure down the road, but this young 7-year-old girl does not strike me as a belligerent racist, you know?
Yeah, well, you don't know, maybe she was one of those people on the league servers this morning at, you know, 11 a.m. or whatever.
That's true. Yeah. Apparently she, a total side note, she's also getting invited to the World Championship in August. I don't know if they separate the junior league at that point or not, so I really hope people are nice, you know.
I mean, I for one am looking forward to, you know, the Ender's Game of Pokemon players.
Yes, dude. Yes. Yeah. Total side note. I played a good amount of like Android Netrunner at like competitive events. It's like a tabletop game. Mm-hmm. And that was a community that was uniquely welcoming for CCGs in a way that I really haven't seen to this day. And there were numerous tournaments where there would be very young kids and they would do pretty consistently good. Like, you know, young girls at the age of 12, I would be playing against. And sometimes they would lose and sometimes they would win. But for the most part, the crowd there was so welcoming to young kids that it made everybody feel better. It's kind of like why I really like going to beer gardens where there's like kids there, because it just makes me feel like I'm in a safe community space as opposed to like, like, look, I'm old. I don't want to go to a fucking dive bar anymore where it's really dark and the music is really loud and grungy.
Someone's going to crack you with a pool cue.
Yeah, like, I want to go somewhere where I can drink, like, a sour beer and there's, like, six kids and they're all, like, shoving their face full of chicken tendies or whatever, you know? Like, that to me is far more just, it makes me feel much more rewarded and safe and comfortable. And I think that same thing should be said of esports, which are notoriously unwelcoming. If we can get more kids into them, I think it will legitimately make it feel like a more welcoming space and more people will get into that scene.
And just the diversity of I mean, this is, I guess this is not a profound statement, but diversity tends to yield better communities.
Yes, for sure.
And so it's like, and when you even think about esports, they're actually not, they are not super diverse when it comes to that sort of thing. And it is a cool, and also I think tonally Pokemon sets people up to at least be, you know, this isn't about throwing knives at each other, you know?
Yep.
And I think there is something at least subconsciously.
That's a whole nother league. Children's knife throwing competition. You know what I want to see out of this though? I actually want to see all other esports, Smash Brothers, for example. Mm-hmm. I think if you're a pro, you are now mandated to bring on a young apprentice.
Oh, a train Padawan. Them up.
Yeah, like a Padawan, if you will, right? Or like a Big Brother's Little Brother scenario, right? Where you're training them up almost as though they were your Pokemon and you put them into battle and they're competing against each other. Let's get a junior league of CSGO, you know?
And then you just have the coaches be these old grizzled 23-year-olds and there's a bunch of 10-year-olds competing.
Yeah, like Team Liquid, Team Wickwit, you know?
Now I'm just thinking about every time I go to a, you know, family-friendly beer garden, that there's probably some kids in there that would stomp me in competitive Pokemon.
Oh, dude, no doubt.
So I'll just bust my Switch out and look like a rube and see if any of them will take pity on me.
That's why it's just, that's a children's game. I don't play those games.
It's a children's game, and I don't mean that derisively. I mean, you can't compete with these children.
it belongs to them now.
I've seeded it. They're our future, and the future is now.
Yeah.
All right, we will leave it there for now. ExperiencePoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And ExperiencePoints.net is the website. Come on down, bring your friends, bring your kids, you know? Let them listen.
It makes us feel safer.
Yeah, maybe don't let them listen. Certain episodes, let's put it that way. Yeah. You can find us wherever you find podcasts, Stitcher, iTunes, etc.
Cool. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Ciao. Every time we disagree, there's a place to go to.